Good evening, truth seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. I'm still trying to recover from the tremendous win by the religious crazy man last night, Rick Santorum. Of course, I don't think he got any delegates. Did he? Did he pick up a couple? poor Mitt Romney. But I love it. You know, keep it going, boys. Rick Santorum, a religious, maniacal, corpse-handling freak if ever one existed. There he is, ladies and gentlemen. Rick. All right, now close your eyes and think of this. President Santorum. Oh, my God. This hour is sponsored by Ron and Carol. Thank you both, Ron and Carol. The message, working people, wake up. You make the rich richer. Demand your fair share. We love you, Mike. Ron and Carol. Thanks, Ron. Thanks, Carol. Thanks, folks. Working people, wake up. You make the rich richer. Yeah. I don't suppose we're supposed to have a fair share anymore, right? President Santorum. Tom Ferguson is a professor of political science, University of Massachusetts in Boston, among other things. He said today, quote, now it's Missouri, Colorado, and Minnesota in the Holy Trinity. Rick Santorum's victories there last night are a warning that Mitt Romney's leveraged buyout of the Republican Party is still in deep trouble. When he faces just one major conservative challenger, Romney loses. You know, when there's two or three, the vote gets split. But just one, Romney loses. Nowhere has the, quote, Massachusetts moderate, end quote, managed to claim the allegiance of more than half of the tiny electorates that show up for GOP primaries or caucuses. Probably his super PAC can bring him through Super Tuesday, but conservatives who know the story of the golden calf are unlikely to quit. For a generation, the Republican Party establishment encouraged religious conservatives to flock to its standard. Now that is coming apart as the Republican establishment reaps what it has sown. I added that last part. By the way, Ferguson recently wrote a piece at alternate.org titled The Devil and Rick Santorum, Dilemmas of a Wholly Owned Subsidiary. Holy, of course, is spelled H-O-L-Y. And also a comment from Frederick Clarkson. He is the author of the book Eternal Hostility, The Struggle Between Theocracy and Democracy. Among other things, he said today, the question of separation of church and state has been a defining issue for Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum. But both are now engaged in a dangerous demagoguing of their policy differences with the Obama administration by declaring that he is engaging in a war on religion. Both gave speeches earlier in their quest for president that anticipates the current attacks by them. They both traveled to Texas to echo and answer John F. Kennedy's famous 1960 campaign speech to the Greater Houston Ministerial Association. That has been the model for how politicians balance religion and public life for a generation. But not Romney and Santorum. Both embraced the rhetoric of the religious right. You betcha. Here we are, religious fanatics. The book of Leviticus, forget Sharia law, the book of Leviticus will govern this country. Amen. Amen. Rick Santorum, when he went to Houston, made a denunciation of Kennedy's statement, which was, Kennedy said to the Protestant preachers all those years ago, Kennedy said, quote, I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute. When Santorum came to the Boston area last year, he denounced Kennedy before a Catholic audience. Of course. He blamed Kennedy, Santorum did, for the alleged secularization of public life. Oh, no! Calling Kennedy's statement radical in that it has done great damage. And then Romney, as a Mormon, Frederick Clarkson writes, faced a similar obstacle to his candidacy that Kennedy faced in 1960. In his Texas speech in 2007, Romney sought to turn secularism into a boogeyman. Romney said, quote, in recent years, the notion of the separation of church and state has been taken by some well beyond its original meaning. It is as if they are intent on establishing a new religion in America, the religion of secularism. You see? Do you get this, truth seeker? Is it sinking in? Now, the problem here, of course, is you and I are in the minority. Because I'm assuming that at very best, you're agnostic, and at worst, you're like me, you're just a full-blown atheist. The vast majority of Americans, poll after poll indicates, not only believes in a conscious afterlife where, you know, there are angels and floating around and seeing God and so on and so forth, but more importantly, and I think this is more importantly, they believe in eternal damnation. Now, see, that's the motivator. The eternal damnation part, the hell, the pain, the suffering, the misery for all of eternity, with snakes, scorpions, and spiders chewing on your body forever, watching your spouse do it with 1,000 demons. Man. So the Republican Party has been begging for the religious right to take over. The religious right has now taken over the idea of separation of church and state. Separation of church and state to these religious right fanatics in the Republican Party means absolutely nothing. It means nothing. And the way they skew the argument, of course, they have to do this, is there's an attack on religion. It's religion that's under attack. Not a non-theistic lifestyle where people go about their business if they want to believe in some religious hocus-pocus. Okay, that's what Sundays are reserved for, right? But no. Or Saturdays. But no. Or Fridays. But no, this is what the religious Christian right in this country is doing. The very thing that they are screaming until their little throats are raw that the Muslims want to do in America, and that is impose religious law. You see how this works? Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? You show me, and there are some, and I know who they are. I was going to say, you show me a Christian who follows the teachings of Christ, and I'll show you a complete aberration. But I know a couple. Father Roy Bourgeois is one. Some of the nuns, actual nuns and priests who go to nuclear bomb sites or missile sites or School of the Americas and put their bodies out as a form of sacrifice against these warmongering sons of bitches who run the planet. Those people I respect, but I've said before, I just have a feeling I would respect them equally without their attachment to Christianity. But that's just me talking. It doesn't mean a thing.
Stay Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Got an email from Greg Palast today via, it was in the Huffington Post. Now, I just have to share it with you very quick. He says, I arrived into this world at the Queen of Angels Hospital in Los Angeles, into the hands of Dr. Sidney Kolodny. Queen of Angels, judging by the number of nun nurses running about, is a Catholic hospital. Dr. Kolodny was Jewish. Last night, I heard Senator Rick Santorum tell us that President Obama has attacked Catholics and freedom of religion by barring church-controlled businesses from excluding contraception care in their employees' health plans. Joining the shriek fest against the president's decision, the sanctimonious little ex-senator prattled on about big bad government crushing religious freedom. That's just ass backwards. Obama's decision is a defense of religious freedom. Religious freedom is a right of people, not their bosses. The Queen of Angels Hospital, church-owned though it may be, has no right to tell its Jewish doctors and employees to wear crucifixes. Nor should the church's managers be allowed to tell their employees that the health care they receive by law should be dictated by the religious views of their employer. A question for you, Mr. Santorum. Should Catholic reporters working at the Christian Science Monitor newspaper be told they can't have blood transfusions because the church owner doesn't sanction surgery? Good point, Greg. It makes me furious that the Obama administration does not defend itself and the religious rights of workers. No damn employer should be allowed to tell an employee what medicine may be prescribed by their doctor based on the business owner's beliefs. What's Santorum worried about? I guess he believes that without the force of law to restrain them, the nuns of Queen of Angels Hospital will dash off to get prescriptions for birth control pills. If a religious organization abjures condoms or the pill or blood transfusions, that's their right. It should not be their management's right, even if the managers wear vestments, to impose those religious strictures on the bodies of their workers. It's about freedom of the worker from the religious dictates of her employer. I'll say it, even if for some reason Obama can't. Greg Palast writing today at the Huffington Post. Yeah. I mean, the whole issue, of course, is phony. Just like Rick is a phony little bastard, and so is Mitt Romney. Romney is so contorted, so twisted, so misshapen. I mean, it's unbelievable. The guy, it's like he's been through a major airplane crash. And you know, his foot's over there, and his leg's over there, and his torso's up here. I mean, this guy has really separated himself from himself. I mean, he's done it. Mitt Romney at one time, not that long ago, was a moderate Republican. And no, those terms, they don't apply anymore, but at a certain time, they did. And Mitt Romney's only experience was one term as governor of Massachusetts, and yet he tries to paint himself as what? Like he's got experience to run the country. You son of a bitch. It's unbelievable. This has nothing to do with anything that the right-wingers are saying it does. This has to do, as we've talked about over and over and over again, the absolute necessity of people of the book, Jews, Muslims, and Christians, to totally, completely control their women. This is about male dominance. This is about utter, absolute terror on the part of these men where it concerns their women. I might fall into that thing. This is what it's about. And anyone who denies that is either a fool or a knave or both. to say that Barack Obama or anybody in the Obama administration is getting squidgy with religion because health insurance says, well, okay, it'll cover birth control. It'll also cover the, erectile dysfunction crap. That has nothing to do with religion. The religionists want it to, but it doesn't. This is just a full frontal assault. This is what the religious right, this is what the Republican politicians have been promising the religious right for so long. Stick with us, boys. Stick with the Republican Party. And one of these days, we're going to own this country. And then, by God, literally, by God, we're going to set things right.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Ron and Carol. Their message is, working people, wake up. You make the rich richer. Demand your fair share. We love you, Mike, Ron and Carol. Thanks. Thanks, guys. Girls, Ron and Carol, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Newt Gingrich is, somebody has greased the railings under him, and his descent into madness is just only accelerating. I think it may be Callista. I think Callista might be a creature from a different dimension, and she's come over here and latched onto Newt. I think she feeds on him at night. It doesn't appear that way, but I have a feeling that she's maybe inhaling his vital body fluids, like his blood, and replacing it with, I don't know, soy paste or something. It's weird. But Gingrich is watching this guy, watching this clearly articulated descent into madness is almost sad. He kept a stiff upper lip today, it's being reported, after his poor showing in the caucuses last night. But he's issuing dire warnings about Iran's potential nuclear capabilities. Ooh. You don't elect me at your own peril. He told a crowd in Cleveland, a small crowd of manufacturing workers. Why would manufacturing workers turn out to hear a man in the Republican Party going insane incrementally? What? I don't get that. But anyway, he told these workers that the United States will pay a terrible price if Iran develops nuclear weapons. Gingrich told the employees of the Jurgens metal manufacturing plant, quote, you think about the dangers to Cleveland or to Columbus or to Cincinnati or to New York. Remember what it felt like on 9/11 when 3,100 Americans were killed. Now imagine an attack where you add two zeros, that's 300,000 dead, maybe 500,000 wounded, This is a real danger. This is not science fiction. That's why I think it's important that we have the strongest possible national security. And have you noticed in the back of the room those strange floating shapes that keep bouncing up and down like balloons? You know, they follow me everywhere. I can't get away from them. But I'm talking about Iran. Well, in the first place, 3,100 Americans were, I guess, at all three sites. That's true. 3,100 Americans were killed. But there were also people of 60 different nationalities that were killed in the, quote, attack, end quote, on the United States by, quote, Muslim fanatics, end quote. But there's no need to mention those people. And there's no need to mention the hundreds of thousands of Muslims that the United States military has iced prior to September 11, 2001. You know, Newt fancies himself now a spokesperson for the Catholic Church. Maybe he should listen to a spokesman who's now dead for the Muslim religion. Let me think of one. Oh, yeah, Osama bin Laden, who categorically warned the United States repeatedly, get your troops out of our holy lands. And, of course, we have no intention of doing that because the holy lands also happen to contain a lot of oil. Holy land, my ass, this is oil land! Take your religious shrine somewhere else, boys! So you can, you know, you can spin the attacks on 9/11 any way you want to. If you're a murderous son of a bitch like Glenn Beck, you can spin it into the insanity that ricochets around his worm-filled brain. If you're Newt Gingrich or Santorum or so many Democrats and Republicans, you can plead utter and absolute wind-driven snow, pure white innocence on the part of the United States, and oh my God, for no reason at all, they attacked us! And somewhere on that continuum of we were warned to the hundreds of thousands we have butchered to the 3,100 Americans killed on September 11th, somewhere on that continuum, your opinion is going to fall. And I think as we get further and further removed from those awful events that day, September 11th, 2001, the intricate realities, all the things that were part of the interplay that brought New York and Pennsylvania and D.C. to that terror is shifted. It's changed. Instead of complicity in our own destruction, where it concerns 9/11, we're getting away from that now. We didn't have any complicity. We had nothing to do with it. We were just totally innocent. The only reason they attacked us is because we buy houses. The fact that we have butchered countless numbers of people all over the Muslim world is immaterial to the events of September 11th. The fact that we had troops in Saudi Arabia, the fact that we had slaughtered in Gulf War I tens of thousands of the Iraqi civilians, the fact that we continue to support a regime in Israel that punishes brutally human beings that the Israelis consider to be subhuman. The fact that come on. So now Gingrich says the dangers to Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati. Remember what it felt like on 9/11. Now, of course, military experts say Iran has no way to deliver a bomb of such devastating power to the United States, even if they could produce such a weapon. Iran they don't have any long-range bombers and the missiles that would be needed. But that doesn't make any difference They're coming. The Iranians are coming. The Nicaraguans are coming. The Vietnamese are coming. The Hondurans are coming. They're coming. And the gays are already here. Now, a smaller so-called dirty bomb capable of spreading radiation could occur. That is the most likely short-term threat if Iran actually did produce a nuclear device. It's conceivable that such a bomb could be smuggled into the United States. But think about the dangers to Cleveland, to Columbus, or Cincinnati, or New York. I mean, Gingrich and Santorum and the rest of these crazed religious freaks. And Romney. I mean, the picture they paint. You're going to vote for someone like this? Mr. or Ms. Right-Winger, you really are going to vote? What about mourning in America? What about Ronald Reagan? What about shining hill on the city, on the hill, on the lights, on the rainbow? What about that? Look what has happened to the Republican Party. And do you understand why? Because the Republican Party has been taken over by religion. And all religion is centered on death. All religion has as its foundation death, death, death. You're going to die! Do you want to burn in hell? Do you want to wander in the darkness? Death. So, if we look historically at how elections are decided in this country, not to worry, the Republicans are not going to put someone in the position of being CEO of the United States. It's not going to happen unless the people of the United States are more insane than you and I think they are. Now, in that case, it's too grim to think about.
Oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
The unity is on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering games and daisy chains and laughs. Got to keep the lunatic on.
Nine before the hour. Thanks to Ron and Carol who sponsored this hour. Their message, working people, wake up. You make the rich richer, demand your fair share. We love you, Mike. Ron and Carol, thanks. Ron, thanks, Carol. And cookies to you. Jamie in Baltimore sent me an email here during the break. Mike, regarding the ongoing vitriol toward women and reproductive health, I'm sure I'm not the only one asking why the hypocritical pedophile protectors in the Catholic Church don't require the following for each and every prescription for medication to treat erectile dysfunction. One, proof that the man is legally married to a woman. 2. An affidavit that the female wife wants her husband to have this medication. 3. A legally binding statement by both husband and wife that all conjugal acts will culminate in vaginal sex in the absence of any form of contraception. Points 1 and 2, Jamie writes, are requirements of the Catholic Church. Anyone who does not follow them are, per the Church, committing mortal sins. How about that? What a bunch of dirtbags. Best Jamie. Yeah, this has nothing to do how do I want to say this? Let me change it. This has everything to do with religious nonsense and nothing whatsoever to do with a woman's right to conduct herself as she chooses or sees fit. The three people of the book are sexist to the point of declaring that the first birth was by a man. It was a man that delivered the first person, not a woman. No, 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 no. I mean, that's perverted. To insist that the first birth in the history of the human race was a man delivering a woman. Woo! That's a clear indication of what you think of women. Did I finish up with Gingrich? Yeah, I think I did. Okay, the last one here. I've got something very interesting after the break. Ohio Governor John Kasich. I've had my experience with that punk. He's another one who is sliding down that slippery slope into madness. Either that or seriously, there's something terribly wrong with Kasich, and it could be the condition that he's dealing with or the medication he's taking. But, and I say that specifically and without irony and no black humor intended, he gave a State of the State address on Tuesday. And according to reports, it was a rambling 100-minute-long speech that had a series of bizarre and potentially offensive statements. During the address, Kasich imitated a Parkinson's patient, you know, with the shaking stuff like Rush Limbaugh did regarding Michael J. Fox. He cried, Kasich did. He insulted the people of California, the entire state. He talked about his words, hot wife. He gave 14 shout-outs to the same person, and I don't know, about 70 minutes into the speech, Kasich discussed medical research and its impact on Ohio's economy. He was highlighting a program at Ohio State University that is called Deep Brain Massage to cure Parkinson's. When he started simulating the shaking actions that mark the disease, and if you've seen the video, it's pretty creepy. He talked about job creation, and he said this, quote, a year ago, Ohio ranked 48th in job creation. We trailed only Michigan and California in lost jobs. Michigan, the home of the auto industry that was devastated, and California, of course, filled by a bunch of wackadoodles. he moved the speech's location from the state capital in Columbus to the little town of Steubenville, near the Pennsylvania border, and he went to a school auditorium to deliver the State of the State speech. I mean, I don't know. He said he was using the rural location to highlight new investment in fracking in the state. And then he championed Ohio's coal industry. He said, we're the Saudi Arabia of coal. And he said some things about that. And then he also said, and I also want to give a nice comment about my wife, Karen. Sweetie Stan, take a little wave, would you? Okay. I remember that cartoon that said Kasich will not reveal how he snagged that hot wife. You know, it's just grim and gruesome to see people entering into that slide into total senility and madness, whether it is Kasich or Limbaugh or Gingrich or... Wait a minute, what am I saying? Actually, it's quite fun. It is 7 past the hour. The phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to give us a call. This hour is sponsored by Jim, Taleb. Thank you, Jim. His message, thank you for talking about the Palestinians. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Jim. Stephen is in Burbank, California. Hey, how you doing, Stephen?
Just great, considering that we have to deal with this religious noise all the time.
Oh, God, I know.
And if we look hard enough, we can see that it starts from the very beginning in the so-called Holy Bible. The two accounts of Genesis, as you know, the first one stated that God created man on day number six. Right? And yeah. So then you read again, and it says, in the day before there was vegetation. Now, vegetation was on day number three, and then the second account says, in the day before vegetation, formed out of the dust, you know, breathed in the nostrils, the breath of life, all that noise. So is it day number six, or is it day number two?
What difference does it make?
Because what happens is, when theocracy gets its bloody claws into society, there are going to be sects, S-E-C-T-S, as usual.
Right, right.
And they will be slashing each other to pieces, those who believe day number six and the others who believe day number two. They will be at war with each other.
That's very true.
Like the Protestants, the Catholics, the Shia, the Sunni.
Right.
And that is how the power-mongering establishment wants things to be. And I'll reiterate, they're laughing their asses off. They don't believe that myth. Plato said, promote the myth, you know, for societal cohesion. You know?
Right, right, exactly, exactly.
Throw with them.
Oh, my God. It just, I don't know where to get off the train. I really don't. It's just madness.
Well, it can be fun if you adapt to it somehow. You know?
Well, that's what they're trying to get us to do. That's the problem, is the Platonic idea. Tell them the myth. Live the myth.
Exactly.
Right?
Which proves that George Bush, Barack Obama, Condoleezza Rice, they are all atheists. If they really believed what it says, they would not do what they do. The thievery, the murder.
That's true. That's true.
So,
well,
you know what.
Yeah, the public posturing of people, I don't care who they are. They can be fanatics with a Kalashnikov. They can be standing there buggering a little boy. It doesn't make any difference to me. The religious fanatics, and they're in every religion, are destructive. They are death walking the earth. They appear to be life, but they're really dead. And they bring their decay with them, and that's the reason I rail against it. I mean, if there was some redeeming quality, if there was one redeeming quality that could be found in religion that's not found in secularism or in philosophy or any place else. In other words, if there was something unique in religion, something that made it unique, that was factual, then it might be worth debating. But it's... There's nothing there. Nothing.
Yeah. I agree.
So that's kind of where I'm coming from. All right, Stephen. Thanks, man.
Okay, boss.
Appreciate you checking in. John is in Indianapolis, listening on XM. Hello, John.
Hi, Mike. Pleasure to talk to you.
Uh-huh.
Hey, this is your Religious Wednesday. I just got a couple questions. You know, I was brought up in the church and as a Baptist, and I used to go to church and see all the people supposedly getting the Holy Ghost and all this
right
other kind of stuff, and I just never felt that. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not a bad guy or anything like that. I just never felt that so-called spiritual enhancement or whatever you want to call it.
Does that make you feel bad?
When you get around certain people, it kind of, you know, make you want to feel bad about it. You know, yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Well, did you ever believe in fairies and elves?
Well, yeah. No, I mean, no, not really. No, no.
Not really. Do you feel bad about that?
No. No.
Okay.
No.
Well, there's not a whole lot of difference. I think the reason. I was brought up Baptist too, John, and I think the reason that you might feel bad about this when you get around people who have received the Holy Ghost, that is, they have talked themselves into this state of self-hypnosis or hysteria, is because the reason you feel bad is because you didn't do that. I mean, you weren't able to twist yourself into a pretzel. And everybody in the church I grew up in, and it was, you know, it was my grandmother's church, and I loved my grandmother. You know, I mean, I loved my grandmother. I loved my grandfather. I loved them, but they were, you know, they both died when I was relatively young. I think my grandmother died when I was 15. My grandfather died when I was 22. So I never had a chance to sit down with them and say, wait a damn minute here. But I loved them both. And my grandmother, who was a real fundamentalist, she was part of the Southern Baptist Convention, even though the church was in Ohio. You know, they're all over the place. They're part of the Southern Baptist. So you know that those were some strong Bible-believing Baptists. But, you know, she also, I hope this isn't offensive to my dead grandmother. Well, how in the hell would she know? But she was also very uneducated. Both my grandparents. I think my grandmother had about a third grade education in this country. My grandfather had about a fourth grade education in Italy. And they were both very uneducated people. They succeeded in raising their children and owning a business and getting through the Depression and blah, 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 and World War I and World War II. But they were very, very uneducated and very, very ignorant. And I don't say that with any malice. I'm just saying what is. You know what I'm saying? So,
Mike, I'm going to interrupt you. But
sure.
What is your basic philosophy as far as things that's going on Earth and what happens after you die and all that? I mean, this is your basic philosophy.
Well, I've got a 7-year-old who asked me that question, and I've told her, look, at some point, every single atom in your body, Molly, was part of a star system somewhere. Was part of a the universe. And right now, all those little molecules and atoms are in the form of a human being named Molly. Now, when you die and when I die, since matter nor energy can be neither created nor destroyed, it can only be changed, it means that your body will, once again, it may take billions of years, but at some point, your body, all the component parts of your body are going to wind up in the star system again. As far as your spirit, then becomes free. Your spirit just joins, and this is where I start to lose her, a kind of collective consciousness that is not really conscious, but is the energy that is the universe. Now, all that is just New Age gobbledygook to some people, but to me, I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. Afterlife, schmafterlife. That's baloney. Dust, you come from dust, you return. And I'm not talking about, the creation myth in the Bible. I'm talking about cosmic dust. So that's it for you. All right?
One more thing.
Sure. Quick, John.
Now, then the religious right people, the religious people, they come out the book, take the stuff out this, King James version or whatever.
Yeah.
The King James Bible, right?
Yeah.
Who was King James anyway?
King James the First, I believe, of England, who commissioned people to write what at the time was a modern version. He asked people like Christopher Marlowe and William Shakespeare and a few other people to come up with translations from the ancient Hebrew and Greek and present it to him, and that's why they call it the King James Bible. It was the one he commissioned. I got to leave it there. Thanks, John. Take care.
Speakers, it'll be our secret.
Past the hour. Where are we here? Here we are. David is in Topanga, California. Hello, David.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Good to talk to you again. This is the Lakota dude. I called you from Santa Fe.
Oh, yeah. How are you doing?
My blessings to your family, too.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
I like the way you described that to Molly about what that gentleman asked you about us and, being stardust. That was really excellent.
Well, she's right at that age where I think Molly started asking me about death about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago. And since we don't have any religious lies to provide her with, I wanted to give her something. It's what I believe. I mean, I don't have any problem believing that. I mean, that's just simple physics or one of the laws of thermodynamics or something. It's in there somewhere. It's very simple. And every atom inside my body and your body at one time was part of a star system. And in a sense still is, but indirectly. It was, at one time more directly. So, whatever.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with that. I was listening to the program, and the thought I wanted to get across was, these flying monkeys, they're multiplying a lot, but they keep trying to divert people from the everyday concerns of feeding their families.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is a big deal. I've been underemployed mostly for the last 2 to 3 years. And before that, I had a business for a long time doing stonework, stone masonry, and I've hardly had any work, and it's just really taken a toll.
Mm.
Like tomorrow morning, I'm going to help somebody that's getting evicted, and it just goes on and on. and these people are screaming about contraception.
I know. It's just crazy.
And all this diversion, all this crap, so that people won't think about that, you know, they can't afford to buy their kids food, much less new shoes, or anything like that.
That's so true.
You know, that's my big concern.
Well, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So I think whenever we can, we need to keep people awake and tell them to, you know, quit listening to all the crap and remember, you know, the important things.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons I focus on it, David, is to try to demolish it, because these are false. What am I trying to say? These are red herrings, you know, to tell people that their main concern should be whether or not the Affordable Care Act has a provision in it that talks about providing birth control pills as part of the insurance program. I mean, to focus on that and start this insanity about that is just madness. I mean, the whole political system just collapses.
Another day or two, it'll be some other crazy thing that they want to divert people with.
You remember when it was, what was the woman's name, Kathy, that was on life support? Terri Schiavo, remember that during the early Bush years? I mean, the whole damn country, they had a special session of Congress, for God's sake. Rick Santorum and George Bush, and everybody was running around with their heads on fire because a woman was in a terminal state of death. It's just unbelievable.
And Tom, the amount of hours and days and weeks they spend on this stuff.
I know. Well, craziness in the U.S. is absolutely right. Thanks, David. I hope you call again. Always good to hear from you. Thank you, sir. Take care. Greg is in Long Island. Is that right? Hi, Greg.
Hey, Jim. Oh, Jim. Sorry. Hey, Mike. Good evening.
That's all right. Call me anything. Just never late for lunch, all right?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing quite a bit here. But before I got to my point, I wanted to sing the praises of one of your sponsors on one of your shows from last week. I don't know if you remember, Collage Art Emporium.
Yeah.
Sponsored a show last week, so I got in contact with her. And I just moved back to New York and opened up a new office for my chiropractic practice, and I called her and we collaborated on a painting for my office.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, so I'm very excited to get it. It's really a lot of ideas went into it, so if anybody's looking for some real great art, original stuff, definitely go to her website. That was real good. But I came across
it always warms my soul to hear somebody say that. Hey, Greg, let me put you back on hold, because I've got we got a break coming here in 5 seconds, and before you get cranked up, let me get through this break, and we'll come back and chat. It is church night. The lines are open. 877-996-2556. Get in here and join us.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before, excuse me, before the hour This hour is being sponsored by Jim Taleb, whose message is, thank you for talking about the Palestinians. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate the sponsorship very much. All right, back to Greg in Long Island. Okay, church night quote from the Pope, I think, is...
Yes, it was John Paul II. Actually, E.J. Dion actually read it on Rachel Maddow's show last week, and it was posted on Democratic Underground, but it's a speech he gave in 1984 in Toronto, and he talks about the need to ask critical questions and assert basic moral principles which have a bearing on technological development. So here are the two sentences that are pretty striking. It says, for instance, the needs of the poor must take priority over the desires of the rich, the rights of the workers over the maximization of profits, the preservation of the environment over uncontrolled industrial expansion, production to meet social needs over production for military purposes. So there's a little bit more, but, you know, if there's a quote that is completely anti-Republican, mm-hmm. yet they use the church to hide behind everything as the basis for what they do, for being morally right in all arguments, yet here's the Pope in pretty much three sentences throwing all of their actions out the window.
Well, this is why, to me, they're all detestable. What you just quoted, I guess that was Pope John Paul. Excuse me. What you quote, you said from 88, 98?
84.
84.
The Anglican Church of St. Paul in Toronto. That's when he supposedly gave it.
And those three sentences are the essential message of Jesus, the rabbi that roamed through the Middle East 2,000 right. years ago. There's nothing else to say except, I mean, what that boils down to is do unto others as you would have others do unto you, which is the basic teaching in just about every philosophical concept in the history of the human race. But Republicans are not interested in Jesus. They never have been. They're not interested in whether or not Jesus was the Christ or the Messiah. They don't care about that. They just use it to beat the living hell, metaphorically speaking, out of other people, to guilt trip other people, to hide. They use the cross as a bludgeon. They use the Bible as a hammer. And they're disgusting and contemptible, and that's the reason we have Wednesday night church on this radio program every once in a while, is to dig at these rancid bastards, because they're not advancing the ideas put out by this rabbi 2,000 years ago. They're not even coming close. What they're doing is using religion as a weapon, and damn them for it. You know what I'm saying?
All right, Mike, thanks so much. Keep up the great work.
All right, appreciate it, Greg. Take care. Take care. I don't know. Sickening. You know what I'm saying? I realize that there are decent people who have a belief system that pretty much follows what we presume were the teachings of this rabbi 2,000 years ago, of peace and justice. The Gospel of Thomas, one of the books of the Bible, not of the Bible, but of the New Testament, or the Gospel of Thomas, written after the rabbi walked this planet, and the Gospel of Mary, that's another one, that if you've read those, the Gnostic Gospels, first of all, they're great fun to read. When you read them and you realize what was taken out of the Christian canon where it concerned Jesus and God, when you realize what was taken out, It's just astonishing. But if one were really to say, okay, I'm you know, I'm going to follow the this Palestinian rabbi named Jesus who roamed the earth 2,000 years, well, roamed the Middle East 2,000 years ago, because I believe in his message. Good on you. I realize there are people who do that, who really do see. They may not have a whole lot of interest in the divinity or the messianic quality of this rabbi, but they believe in his teachings, much the same as you can look at the teachings of Gandhi or the teachings of Dr. King, or the Buddha. You can pick all down through the history of this species of ours, certain people who presented themselves as humble and having a very basic humanitarian message. You know, don't screw up. Don't kill people. Don't act like a dumbass. You know, share your food, share your house if you have to, share your love and your affection and your care, and that's how you develop what we would call spirituality. That is an aspect of life. You know, it is. So when you hear me go off on religion, and I do, and I beat it to death, and you know I do, and I just piss off so many people, I cannot tell you how many people who listen to this program who say, you know, I had to turn you off because I am a Christian and I can't stand what you're saying. So when you talk about your feelings about religion, I have to go. I understand that, and that's cool. And I'm not the least bit offended. But I will not shut up when these Christian hypocrites, which is damn near all of them, the public, I'm talking about, you know, you have to make public statements to be a hypocrite. It's pretty hard to be a hypocrite in the privacy of your closet. You know what I'm saying? But you can be a hypocrite. I'm talking about closet in the sense that the rabbi talked about. But these public hypocrites, these ones who present themselves as followers of this man and his teachings, and they don't live it, they don't act it, they don't really talk about it. Just like Greg said, you know, it's very simple. Jesus lays it all out. I mean, it's there in the Gospels. I mean, it's there. As you do to these, the least of my children you do to me. They don't pay any attention to that. The Sermon on the Mount. That's all it takes. All you have to do, just start there and end there. That's all you have to do. But they don't live that way. These professing Christian murderers, and what they're murdering, what they're killing, what they are violating. This is what I think. What the Christians come to believe, you know, they took the Ten Commandments. It's not theirs, you know, it belongs to somebody else. That's another barrel of misinformation. But not to take the Lord's name in vain. Every time Rick Santorum opens his mouth, he's doing that. Every time Gingrich, every time any of these phony-ass Christians open their mouths, that's exactly what they're doing. They're violating one of the most selfish, arrogant of the Ten Commandments. Don't forget, the Ten Commandments, well, eight of them are about me, me, me. I'm the Lord thy God. You have no other gods in front of me, or I'll send thunderbolts down and fry your ass. I mean, that's what the Ten Commandments are. They're just how to acknowledge this thundering madman who exists somewhere up in heaven or wherever the hell he exists. But when you hear these professing Christians and what they're saying, having been brought up in a religious system, I just want to just go hide from them. There's still that little part of me that says, you know, that's wrong, Santorum. You know, that's wrong, Romney. You know, that's wrong, Gingrich. You know, what you people are saying has nothing to do with the person you call the Son of God. Nothing whatsoever. You're a bunch of liars and hypocrites. And it just, I don't know. And it's not that I have a dog in that fight. I don't. You know, I gave that stuff up a long time ago. But I still retain those Sunday school lessons and the conversations I had with my grandmother 100 years ago about, you know, she would try to take the parables that were told in the Bible in the Sunday school lesson and explain them to me because she was interested in her mind in my immortal soul. She did not want me to go to the lake of fire. She did not want me to miss out on going to heaven. But those stories that she told me and the stuff that you hear from real believers, I'm talking about people who have found comfort and peace and kind of a life dynamic in following that 2,000-year-old rabbi. You know, good on you. My argument's not with you.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
But he ain't what he seems. You'll see him in your head on the TV screen. Hey, buddy, I'm warning you to turn it up. Oh, he's a goat, he's a god, he's a man. He's
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Jim and Taleb and his message. Thank you for talking about the Palestinians. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate the sponsorship. Where are we? Bob the Poet in Tennessee, listening on XM. Hey, Bob.
Mike the Microphone, you're doing good tonight. You spoke Monday, I think it was, about the Challenger explosion.
Oh, yeah.
In 1986, and
yeah.
Mr. Beaujolais,
mm-hmm.
the O-ring whistleblower.
Yes.
Well, I watched the live coverage of that at the time,
mm-hmm.
and one of your least favorite talking heads was on live,
mm-hmm.
Diane Sawyer. And she said, well, you know, some people are saying because of this tragedy, we should give up the manned space flight program and only send up robots. She said, but we've got to go on. What if we had given up our manifest destiny, our westward expansion, because of the resistance of the Indians?
Mm. Is that what she said?
That thoroughly disgusted me, being that I have some Native ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it should disgust anyone because it was purely imperialist.
Yeah, it was, and in the worst sense, if there's anything but a worse sense of imperialism, and that is, collateral damage, people die. Too bad. We must westward ho, no matter what.
Yes, and I just thought you'd like to add that to your anecdotes about Diane Sawyer.
Well, I appreciate it. I've never trusted her. Not that I have to. She's a newsreader, but she does wield influence. And being a speechwriter for Nixon was enough for me. I don't think she ever gave up her hard right political leanings. And not that I care. I mean, Diane Sawyer is nobody to me, and she should be nobody to the rest rest of the country. And I think a lot of these network anchors are really are nobodies, not anymore. It's not like back in the day with Walter Cronkite and Huntley Brinkley, where they honestly wielded some power. But there is so much that's available now. You know, when you have Robert Perry or Chris Hedges, why would anyone give a damn about Diane Sawyer?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, Bob. Take care, okay?
Carry on, Mike.
All right, sir. Appreciate it. Diane Sawyer. Oh, never mind. Gary's in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hello, Gary.
Yeah, that last remark about Diane Sawyer, about the Indians. Yeah, there was this chief Seattle, an environmental movement. He had some statement. I don't remember how it went, but his tribe was dying off because of the white man. He says the white man steps on everything. I don't remember the exact remark, but he says he'll bury his own, you know.
Yeah, well.
Environmentally, I think, in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
But I called about religion. I like how you talk about it. You know that religious right? My father told me about 20 years ago they were very dangerous. And I just like to contrast it. I've been over to Scandinavia a few times. I got relation over there in Sweden. I can't find him in Norway. But the poverty is almost non-existent over there. And these religious rights, they're always judging everybody, you know, how immoral everybody is and stuff.
Right.
You go over to Sweden and they're agnostics and atheists, a whole mess of them over there. I don't know percentages. And poverty is just almost gone. They have the best health care in Europe, most of those countries, and they don't have this greedy system like us where the drug and insurance companies kill people and stuff. And they don't go around professing to be these moral giants like these right-wingers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I said something funny to the lady that answered that... I grew up in a German Lutheran church. I'm not German, but it was by our house, and it was real conservative. It turned me off for religion. And I remember my grandma, they were the strongest Democrats down where they lived in southern Minnesota because of Hoover. That turned my family away from Republicans forever. But her brother used to they were Lutheran, used to go around going against Catholics and stuff, and then he married a Catholic and turned Catholic. She could never get used to that. So she's on her deathbed, and she was pretty young, and I'm 16 years old, and I had to promise to her that I'd never marry a Catholic. That was the most important thing to her when she died. I could never understand religion. I'm an agnostic.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's fairly bizarre.
And the funny thing about her, you know, she was active in the Democratic Party, and in 60, when Humphrey ran against Kennedy... It wasn't just that Kennedy was Catholic, but that he beat her boy, Humphrey, in the primary. And we had to really get after her to get her to Kennedy.
Oh, my God. Gary, thanks, man. We're just about out of time. We all have crazy families, don't we, Gary? Huh? All right. We've got to take a break here when we come back next hour. BP, guess who performed an exorcism in St. Peter's Square in 2009, 2 years ago, although he denies it now. And also, the Mormon Church and guns. There is a massive connection. And it was uncovered by an investigator for Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York. Stick around. You're going to love this. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. Welcome back. So, you know, yeah, right, it's Wednesday, it's church night. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Wednesday night is prayer meeting night. It used to be anyway, I guess it is still in small towns and certain congregations around the country, Protestant, fundamentalist, you know, Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian, Lutheran, you know. And I used to be forced into that when I was a kid. Wednesday night prayer meeting, it was really, really something to see. And like I said before, I was usually the only kid there because it was my grandparents' church, so it was mostly older people. And to watch 15 or 20 adults gather in the upper room of this Baptist church in Findlay, Ohio, and pray. Something that stuck with me my entire life. from a sociological point of view, not from some trauma. I mean, you know, I knew at the time, I think I was only 8, 9 years old. I knew that they were, even though I loved my grandparents, I knew everybody in that room was mad, totally insane, you know. But that's all right, different story. So in keeping with the Wednesday night tilt on this program, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, we have a couple of upper room prayer stories here. First one comes from the New York Daily News. There's a guy named Father Gabriel Amorth. He's an exorcist, an official exorcist for the Catholic Church, and he's come out with a new book. The book is entitled The Last Exorcist, My Fight Against Satan. How's that for arrogance? how's that for, huh? Rah! I fought Satan! Well, and this is the Catholic Church's self-proclaimed expert on exorcisms, you know, getting the evil spirits out of people. I can't believe this. I can't believe in the 21st century or the 20th or even the 19th that this was still seen as real? Casting out demons? Anyway, Father Amorth, in his book, The Last Exorcist, My Fight Against Satan, he makes a very strange, or gives a strange report, strange to me. He says that Pope Benedict himself, the former Nazi youth person who is now the prince of the church, that Pope Benedict performed an exorcist in Rome's St. Peter's Square just 2 years ago, 2009, 2.5 years ago. Father Amorth, you know, I'm not comfortable with that. Let me rephrase it. Gabriel Amorth, he's not a father, certainly not mine, he's not anybody's. Gabriel Amorth claims that Pope Benedict cured two men of their afflictions. This is according, even though I'm getting this from New York Daily News, this is according to London's The Telegraph of the UK. A spokesman for the Vatican says, oh no, 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 not true. Amorth is a liar. What? Saying the Pope Benedict was not aware of the men's afflictions and did not perform an exorcism. Uh-oh. Now, is this dangerous territory or what? You have the church's top exorcist, who's got a book out about his own personal battle with Satan. Take that. Ooh, biff, bam, bop, take that. And making the claim that the Pope himself performed exorcisms. The last one being in 2009. And the church's PR behemoth says, not true. So they're calling the chief exorcist of the Catholic Church a liar. Now, I can see where that might raise some interesting conflicts. Don't you? Huh? According to Mr. Amorth, the priest, the exorcist, his two female assistants escorted the two men, identified only as Marco and Giovanni, Okay. Into St. Peter's Square as the Pope was driven around among the crowds. The two men were given seats in an area normally reserved for the disabled. And now it gets weird. The two men began to act strangely as the Pope approached, according to the book. Quote, they banged their heads on the ground. The Swiss guards watched them but did nothing. They were trembling, slobbering, working themselves into a frenzy. End quote. This is what Gabriel Amorth writes in The Last Exorcist. Even when one of the assistants, one of the women, asked the man called Giovanni to contain himself, the man said, I am not Giovanni, in a voice that was not his own, Mr. Amorth writes in the book. Then the Pope supposedly went to work. This is what Amorth writes. Oh, and Amorth, by the way, claims to have performed thousands of exorcisms. Amorth writes, quote, the Pope watched from a distance. He raised an arm and blessed the four of them. For the possessed, it was like a furious jolt, a blow to their whole bodies, to the extent that they were thrown 3 meters backward. They stopped howling, but they cried uncontrollably. End quote. Gabriel Amorth, who is the 86-year-old exorcist for the Diocese of Rome, has squared off with the Vatican before. He has said, for example, the Harry Potter books encourage children to believe in black magic and yoga is evil. He once said his favorite film is 3, 2, 1, The Exorcist. So who are you going to believe? I mean, you have the church's chief exorcist. The men were slobbering and trembling and eating boogers and rending their garments and pulling their hair and screaming, the Giants plus four! The Giants plus four! When the Pope came over and raised his arm and went, Dominus vobiscum, or something. And you know what? You know what? And to me, this is the sad part. I know. I'm such an anti-religious son of a bitch, aren't I? And I know that I have people out there praying imprecatory prayers all the time. Kill him, God! Kill him! Kill his wife and daughter! Send him to hell, God! Yeah, you know, here, if you could see, if I were on television, you'd see I'm raising my middle finger to you. But I have to say this. Do you know that there are going to be millions, literally, millions of people who will buy this book and who will read about The Last Exorcist, My Fight Against Satan. I wonder if they will include in the book, with the book, this would be kind of cool, kind of a marketing tool, include two little packets. One packet, when you scrape it with you, open with your thumbnail, would exude the aroma of brimstone and stuff burning, hot rocks, stuff like that. And at the end of the book, there'd be a second packet. And when you scrape that open with your thumbnail, you would smell lotuses and roses and flowers and perfumes. Oh, my God. So who do you think is lying? The Catholic Church's chief exorcist or the Nazi Pope? We'll be right back. We do the Carl Orff music every time, and I no offense, Carl, it just fits.
starts right now. Here's Mike Malone.
Twenty-one past the hour, and the second church night story that we have here comes from TBNewsLies.org. I go to their news summary every morning. You got to get it; doesn't cost you anything, and. Their new summary, well, it's not really a new summary, but they select a bunch of stories that you can then peruse at your heart's content. And sometimes they'll add a comment to one of the stories. Here's the comment for this particular story. Church selling guns that will kill God's creatures, great and small. Very Christian, how sweet. And now what the story is about, it comes from the Telegraph of the UK. The Mormon Church owns a website that encourages unregulated gun sales. Yeah, it does. Oh, my God. One of the most active and unregulated gun sale websites in America, as a matter of fact, and it's owned by the Mormon Church. This is a result of an investigation by New York City's Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Bloomberg is a lead campaigner for the regulation of firearms because of the carnage that handguns and not-so-handguns cause on the streets of New York and across the country. Right? You know what really tickles me in a very, once again, very macabre, sick, twisted sort of way? What has it been now? For about 40 years ever since the assassination, maybe 50 years since the assassination of Kennedy? The right-wing half-asses in this country have been bleating and screaming and whining and peeing in their pants about the government's going to come and take our guns. And, of course, it's never happened except once, and that was George W. Bush after Katrina. He ordered the Blackwater people to effect a gun grab in New Orleans. But every single year, these jerkwad, half-witted morons, and they're always caucasoids, running around talking about, well, the government's going to get our guns. Carter's going to get our guns. Clinton's going to get our guns. Obama's going to get our guns. Oh, God. Johnson's going to get our guns. They're coming. They're coming. You know, it's one of the oldest scams. And this activates the knuckle-dragging, a booger-eating crowd to go vote for whatever right-wing fascist Republican is on the ballot, whether it's a member of Congress or a senator or the president. It's very effective. It's like screaming at the Christian crazy people that, you know, the government's going to force every woman to have an abortion. We're going to tie your daughters down and rip babies from their wombs. And then Planned Parenthood will form a great big bonfire of fetuses and drink blood. Jesus, God, you people are just insane. But it's very effective. Works all the time. And what's the other one? Oh, yeah, they're going to pry open the mouths of women and jam birth control pills down their throats. Oh, yeah, that's the newest one. Ooh! What is wrong with you people? My taxes are too high. Your taxes have never in the history of the United States been lower. Jesus, God in heaven. Maybe I should start praying. So anyway, I digress. The Mormon Church maintains a website and maintains a site that is one of the biggest sellers, buyers, and exchanges for unregulated gun sales so that people can buy guns for what? Well, you know, the apocalypse is coming. The hordes of let's see, what is it? Hordes of what now? Hordes, let's see, it used to be Jews, hordes of, oh, it was Polish. Hordes of Italian. No, it's not them anymore. Hordes of liberals. Liberal. Well, screw the liberals. Oh, that's right. Illegal immigrants. They're coming. They're coming. They're coming. They're coming. They're going to rape our family pets and pry open the mouths of our daughters and force birth control pills down their throat. Get a gun. Get a gun. Get a gun. At a Mormon church-owned website? Oh, okay. Once again, what I'm missing is that part of the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus said, "Blessed are those who own firearms, for much blood will be required in the streets of Salt Lake City." I missed that part, but apparently it's there. More on this when we come back, because it just, I don't know. How do you reconcile the Prince of Peace and unregulated gun sales? Or exorcisms, or prying open the mouths of our daughters to force birth control pills down their throats, or running into hospitals and forcing abortion.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. The website is KSL.com. They also have that's a radio and television station. And New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg has been criticizing this website for running classified advertisements which allow individuals to buy and sell handguns and other firearms without background checks and no questions asked. Hey, all in the name of our Lord and Savior, the angel Moroni, or somebody. The site is owned, of course, by Deseret Media. That's the for-profit arm of the Church of Jesus Christus of Latter-day Saints, a.k.a. the Mormons. And the website has, and the church, of course, has gotten a lot of focus lately, thanks to Mitt Romney and to a lesser degree, John Huntsman. But Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who is Jewish and probably doesn't like the fact that the Mormons now are converting dead Jews or baptizing dead Jews into Mormonism or whatever the hell they're doing. I mean, it's just astonishing. But Bloomberg is a, aside from that, is a lead campaigner for the regulation of firearms, which has turned the streets of New York in some instances into rivers of blood. A source who worked on his investigation into online gun sales. Now, think about this. The mayor of the city has conducted his own investigation, not the FBI, not the NSA, not the CIA, not the ABC, not the DEF or the GHI or the JKH, but Michael Bloomberg himself. He hired investigators, and a source who worked on this investigation said, quote, "One would think..." Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. "One would think that a church would feel a special obligation to make sure that they weren't fueling a black market for a particularly deadly form of commerce." End quote. Why would one think that? I mean, churches are in the business of soul snatching or converting people, turning them into automatons for Christ or somebody else, Allah or Muhammad or Moses. I don't know. Churches are in the business of owning your mind. And sometimes, sometimes you have to get a little persuasive. So why not have unregulated gun sales by who knows or who cares? You know, I mean, that's just part of religion. Death is the cornerstone of religion. It is the keystone of religion. It is the foundation of religion. Without death, there's no religion. So why does it surprise one of Michael Bloomberg's investigators that a church would be advocating mass killing? The church has always advocated mass killing. Sometimes in subtle ways, sometimes in not so subtle ways. So what's the big deal? The classified site currently has ads for nearly 6,000 products under its firearms and, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, hunting section, including more than 1,000 handguns. They're all there. Glock, Smith & Wesson, SIGs, they're all there. The Bloomberg report criticizes the site for allowing buyers and sellers to do this privately without having to identify themselves. kind of like a furtive sex site. And that comparison is not all that off the wall. Huh? Right? Ta-da! Now, by having a furtive sex gun site, the unscrupulous buyer who doesn't want their purchase recorded because you know the government is coming, Barack Obama's coming, or Jimmy Carter, Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, Nixon's son, they're going to come and take our guns. No record, no record, no record. Don't mark the bullets. No nothing, no tags. The website allows, it says here, unscrupulous buyers who do not want their purchases recorded and tracked to buy a firearm without it being traced back to them or having to submit to a background check. Well, why not? Why don't you want the gun traced back to you? It's your gun. What is it about guns? The church of the gun. The gun is a church unto itself. It really is. It's like ancient Christians in the catacombs of Rome. Quiet. Is that a fish? It's a fish. Oh, you're a Christian? Yes, shh. Now it's guns. Guns, shh, shh, shh. I don't want anybody to know. No registration, no name, no nothing. Because you know why? The Romans, oops, I'm sorry. The government is going to, Obama's going to take our guns. They're going to feed us to the lions in the Colosseum. Oh, that was a long time ago. They're going to take our guns. They're going to lock us up. Do you have to be insane to own a gun? I'm not insane. I own a gun. Or six. But they're all registered. Everybody in the sheriff's office in my county knows who I am, not because of my radio program, but because of my gun registration. Ooh, ooh, they're going to come and get me. Ooh, ooh, quick, Kathy, let's get out the AK-47 and the Kalashnikov. They don't know about those, because I bought them at KSL.com. I mean, if you're going to deal in this kind of insanity, why not go insane? Why not be insane? Why not, you know? Brett Atkinson, the general manager of KSL.com, wholly owned subsidiary of the Mormon Church, said that the site also included links to a statement which advised those using the site to abide by federal and local gun laws. Mr. Atkinson added, quote, the responsibility for the transaction is that of the parties involved. This is just like any other transaction, a vehicle, a lawnmower, a bicycle. No, it's not, Mr. Atkinson. When you buy a vehicle, it's registered, right? It's licensed, right? And there are rules about how and under what conditions you can drive it, right? So don't make such a gratuitous, snotty-ass comparison that it's just like any other transaction, you know.
a vehicle, a lawnmower, a bicycle, roller skates, a bag of marbles, a candy bar, box of toothpicks, some thumbtacks, a pacifier, birth control. Oh, no, don't go there.
The study by the New York mayor, Bloomberg, showed that 40% of gun sales were made through private vendors rather than reputable dealers. And of these private sellers, 60% carried out no background checks on those they sold to. Well, why should they have to? I mean, you know, when I sell a car to somebody, it's not up to me to, you know, try to determine whether or not, if I sell my car, whether or not they're going to use it to commit a felony like rob a bank. It's up to the state of Georgia. The state of Georgia registers and licenses that vehicle and registers and licenses the driver. So, now, you can argue that you know, vehicle is a lethal weapon, and it is. Well, 35,000, 40,000 people a year are butchered, slaughtered, crushed into unrecognizable lumps of meat on the nation's highways. So you can make the argument, well, then see there, Malloy, it doesn't matter if they're registered. Well, on that basis, you're absolutely right. But if you're caught driving drunk or driving impaired or stoned or ripped or driving around the side of the road before you kill someone, you possibly will go to jail. So the comparison between unlicensed guns and buying an automobile are gratuitous at best, hypocritical at worst, and a curse on the Mormon church. Because Mormons aren't supposed to lie or drink or smoke cigarettes or drink coffee or drink tea or pick their noses or bite their nails or not brush their teeth. But it's okay to have a gun site, a website that sells unlicensed guns to anyone who wants them. It can be a kid 13 or some doddering fool 96 who wants to kill the engines. There's money in the Jesus business, isn't there? Yeah. We'll be right back. Ten before the hour. Church night is always so much fun, isn't it? I used to hate it as a kid. This is my way of striking back, I guess. I don't know. Switching gears, did you happen to see this? It's from Think Progress. BP, the company that single-handedly destroyed the ecosystem in the Gulf of Mexico, what was left of it. BP made, in the entire year of 2011, $3 million an hour. $3 million an hour. Well, it's a big company, Mike, you know. While the victims of the spill continue to suffer. And think for a moment, if you will, of those ads on television. They get somebody who speaks for Louisiana, someone who speaks for Alabama, someone who speaks for Mississippi, and somebody who speaks for Florida. And they show these beach scenes, you know, people frolicking and eating beautiful pink shrimp and lovely crimson-colored lobsters. I don't know why people eat that stuff anyway. You know, when you eat lobster, you're eating spiders. Are you aware of that? But they show these beach scenes. Oh, look at all the happy people. Ooh, running around in the water. The water, I don't know. I've never seen water like that in the Florida Panhandle. I certainly have never seen it off Dauphin Island in Alabama. Louisiana, I don't know. But that water looks like it's from the Virgin Islands or the Bahamas. But that, anyway. There they all are. They're all hanging out. All these people. Oh, man, the beach cabanas are up, and people are having just a great time running around. The sand is white and crunchy. You can almost feel the crunch. And you look at that and you think, well, oil spill? What oil spill? There's no oil spill. And then the people in the commercials, the four people that represent the four different states, hey, come on down. We're down here boiling up a bunch of shrimp. And, man, they are so good. And y'all ought to come back. Tourist season has just been hellaciously good this year. Come on down. And then when the ad runs, out at the bottom, you see a little BP logo. Or that one with the woman standing there. I was born in Louisiana. I still live here. I work for BP, and we're just doing one heck of a job cleaning everything up. It's wonderful now. Really? So there's just no problem. No problem. That spill in 2010 is still affecting the lives of millions of Americans, not the least of whom are people who live along the Gulf Coast, the tens of thousands who have not settled lawsuits with the company yet. That would include the ones that had thriving businesses at the time, whether they were tourist-related or fishing industry. And that's all gone now, but, you know, come on down. We're just having great fun down here. How do you like these shrimps? Look at these shrimps. Of course, they come from Vietnam, but aren't they cute? Oh, they're so pink. BP announced yesterday, I think, that its profit in 2011 totaled $26 billion. That's 114% more than the year before. Do you understand? In 2010, they made, well, apparently, about $12 billion. Or $13 billion, now $12 billion. So this year, or 2011, it was $26 billion. Yeah, that does work out to $3 million an hour, doesn't it? Now, it was in 2010, of course, that was when the company's, quote, failure of supervision and accountability, end quote, I think some court somewhere has found, caused the worst U.S. oil spill in history. And as Think Progress reports, as BP prepares for its upcoming civil trial, and you know nothing's going to happen. Oh, come on. This is just pro forma. Think Progress offers a look at how BP has made out after the Deepwater Horizon disaster. Now, reiterating, BP earned $3 million every hour in 2011. Its fourth quarter profits reached $7.69 billion. The company is sitting on another $14 billion in cash. The company continues to scale back its production in the wake of the spill. BP contributions to federal candidates totaled more than $100,000 in 2011, with more than half, 65%, going to Republican candidates. BP spent $8 million lobbying Congress in 2011. That's down from the record $15 million the company lobbied in 2009, a year before the oil disaster. You don't think there's a connection there, do you? Do you? For every dollar the big five oil companies use in lobbying, they effectively receive $30 in subsidies. Now, you know, Obama mentions this every once in a while, to continue to subsidize the oil industry? What is wrong with you, America? Are you totally nuts? Are you crazy? We are subsidizing with our tax dollars
through capital depreciation and all kinds of interest games, a company like this one that makes a profit of $3 million an hour. And this is only one of the big five. In order to pay the $40 billion cleanup costs and additional penalties, the company has committed to selling $38 billion worth of assets before 2014. Now, despite being found ultimately responsible for the most devastating oil spill this nation has ever seen, BP has spent millions lobbying on bills before Congress that would speed offshore drilling and leases. To hell with the safety precautions. This includes filing a total of 24 reports on bills undermining safety regulations in the Gulf of Mexico. It just never stops, does it? Somebody ought to do an exorcism on BP. I wonder if anyone has that power. Hey, I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.